except for something that happened this week. What is this? She had perhaps the shot.
His name is David Sitch.
Do you have the
No.
If you can just chime in by a follow-up, you can call out or something. Why are you opinion on all the I'm asking if you access that. Good morning, everyone. I think we should start. The time is 5 minutes after 10. It means we're starting 5 minutes later than the prepared time or the set time. We normally introduce ourselves so that we should know who is here. And Honorable Mokoro is not here, but I think we should start. I will then start by introducing myself. My name is Peace Mabi. I'm the chairperson of the Select Committee on Women, Children and People with Disabilities, and I come from Gauteng Province. I will then afford members the opportunity to first introduce themselves, and then after that the department and KPMG, yeah, everyone who's here. Mamsi Kani.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Mamsi Kani, a member of this committee. Coming from Eastern Cape. Another thing, Chair, I want to be excused at 12:30 because I've got another meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Name's Daryl Worth. I'm from the Free State Province, also a member of this committee, and please, I must also be excused at 12:30. Thanks, Chair.
Hello, ma'am.
Do the honors, please do introduce yourself. You are welcome. Please use your mic.
Myself?
Yes.
Oh.
Unless if you want me to do that.
Yeah, you can do it.
No, you do it. No. You can do it better than
us. thank you. Thank you, everybody. And good morning. Good morning.
Morning.
My name is Gauta Mokoro. I'm from the Northern Cape. I'm a member of this committee, Women, Children and People with Disability. We recently visited America on the auspices of this very same committee.
I'm glad you said that.
And there's a lot that we have learned. We are going to impart it to you. You are the department there.
Thank you.
Are you the department?
Yes.
Yeah, we are going to impart it to you, and we would like to see changes taking place, implementation taking place, because we are definitely going to make a very serious and a strong recommendation, and it will be a resolution of the House. So thank you very much for seeing you here. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. The department.
Good morning, Dumelam Chair. My name is Tolufelo Moloi. I'm from the National Department of Social Development in the Victim Empowerment Program Directorate.
Good morning. My name is Cesar Mahango from the Department of Social Development based in Pretoria. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Ingrid Ndavo. I'm the PLO to the Minister of Social Development.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members, and good morning to the members from the department and everyone in the meeting. My name is Isata, and I'm the researcher for private members, standing in for the researcher on this essay on women, children, and persons with disabilities.
My name is Mark. I'm from Parliamentary Communications Services.
Good morning. My name is Prima. I come from France. I'm a student from Project Abroad Human Rights.
Sorry.
I'm from France too, and I am Estelle Mansuy, and I work in the same place. So we are here to understand and learn as much as possible. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. My name is Tumelo Kasimele. I am from the Faculty of Law at GWC. We run a parliamentary program, and so we attend meetings of committees to ensure that issues of women, children, and persons with disabilities are taken into consideration. Thank you.
Good morning, members. Department. I'm Sebamjian Antonjini, committee assistant, currently assisting this committee. Okay.
Morning, everyone. My name is Kilega Magdabella. I'm sending this for Magia.
Good morning, everyone. I'm from Jashi from PMG. Thank you.
PMG. All right, thank you. You are all welcome. Matilda, did you introduce yourself?
No, you should. Sure.
Thank you, Chief. Good morning, everyone. I'm Matilda Vitaro. I'm the PA for Mrs. Kikan.
I was not concentrating, but I could feel that I didn't hear your voice. Okay, you are all welcome. I think we should now deal with apologies. I have before me a written apology from Honorable M. Zulu. He will not be able to attend the above mentioned committees, attending the Select Committee on Appropriations. I don't know if there's any other apology that members would like to put forward. And also to say that Honorable Tsikane, Wealth, and Mashamaite, they've requested to be excused at 12:30. I honestly don't see our meeting going beyond 11:30. I think by 11:30 it will be done, except for what Honorable Mokoro has said, because of course really we've learned a lot from our international study tour, and I think we should make meaningful contributions on this presentation, but also just to caution members that actually this presentation, it comes from the, it's actually a response, ne?
Yes.
From the Domestic Violence Act public hearings that we've held in Parliament sometimes last year.
209.
Yeah, but we have a problem with the turnaround, you know. It's really, it's from there, it's slow. 209, I think it's one thing that needs to be recorded, you know. We need to find, develop a mechanism that will enable us to be able to revisit, you know, especially the recommendations that we make, you know, as to how quickly do departments implement on that. So basically today's meeting is about that. We're going to afford them the opportunity to present to us and tell us what is it that they have done so far, and yeah, just for them to give us responses, and after that we can also make recommendations and ask further questions. I will then allow the department to take us through, and also when you do your presentation, bear in mind to the request that members have made, you know, I want us, when we conclude this meeting, it should still be a full component. Bear in mind that members would want to be excused at 12:30, but I want you to share with us and go into details as much as you can, because your presentation will help us. If there are issues that are outstanding, members will also feel free to do that in writing at a later stage. All right. Feel free. Thank you.
Again, my presentation, as Honorable Chair has said, is just a response to the issues that were raised by the Select Committee. So we came here just to give a brief in terms of the response that is requested from Social Development. We're just going to focus on the purpose, the introduction, the response, and some challenges that we have, and the plan of action that we have put in place, and our conclusion. Well, the purpose is actually just to give
the committee the of women, children and persons with disability on the implementation of the Domestic Violence Act and also to answer on key issues raised by the committee. Just for an introduction, just to indicate that the VEP, which is the Victim Empowerment Program at National Department of Social Development, aims to make the criminal justice process more victim-friendly and effectively address the needs of victims. I just want to highlight that when I say needs of victims, you are referring to all types of victims, not necessarily only domestic violence, because you also have other victims, like victims of sexual assault, victims of human trafficking, and other categories of victims. And the program actually specializes in the in programs and services that support victims of crime and violence. And some of the core programs, amongst others, are domestic violence, sexual assault, human trafficking, etc. And these are the examples of the VEP program that can be summarized as follows. We do the capacity building training for service providers in the victim empowerment, including domestic violence. We establish also a referral mechanism between service providers to enhance effective and efficient service. We also ensure that there's medical legal services provided to victims, counseling and court support programs, sheltering and one-stop center services, the Tutuzela Center, that we also refer some of our victims for services, victim-friendly facilities in the police stations, and victim representation in parole hearing. This is just to highlight our intersectoral, interdepartmental collaboration when we render services to all victims of crime and violence. And this is one of the response to the resources and provision made to address the needs of people in the communities. And these are the what we have achieved thus far since the implementation of the Domestic Violence Act. The department developed a shelter strategy that to be implemented, and this is the process of review. We have in 2001 had 239 shelters that were specifically managed by NGOs, and in 2009 the numbers increased to 96, which were also managed largely by NGOs and government institutions, and 9 one-stop centers and the victim support centers, which were addressing the needs of domestic violence, which is specifically women and children. And 2010-2011, the number increased to 98, with additional shelters established to address and protect the needs of men who are also victims of gender-based violence. And these two shelters were established in Gauteng. A best practice model one-stop center was developed to render a holistic services to victims of crime and violence, and the model will be launched during the September month in Limpopo. The one-stop center model is actually just to ensure that all cluster departments are operating or rendering services under one structure, so that we don't refer our victims to different agencies for support, but we have the whole cluster under one structure. So we also developed domestic violence guidelines for victims of abuse, and stakeholders have been trained, and we have rolled out the implementation of these guidelines through the year of 2010. We also developed a generic integrated set, which we call it GIS, and an MME tool for the cluster, so as to monitor the trends of services rendered within the victim empowerment program. This is also a cluster generic integrated set. It's not only for Department of Social Development. We also participated in the development of the domestic violence strategy and the booklet led by the Department of Justice. This is one of the issues that was also raised during our public hearing in 2009, where a strategy was one of the recommendations that was made, that justice should lead in terms of developing a strategy. There is a progress regarding this strategy. We are having a meeting on the 6th of September to finalize the strategy so that it can be approved by the senior management. In terms of the VEP funding, these are the criteria that we looked at in terms of ensuring that when we fund our NGOs, we look at the following criteria, which is the nature and scope of services that they render, especially within the victim empowerment sector. What target groups are they looking at, which also has to encompass all the women, children, people with disability, and also our elderly.
We look at our project objectives, outcomes and outputs, their work plan, what technical capacity do they have, the staff capacity and their profile, the diversity of services that are rendered, financial matters and the capacity to be able to manage financial matters, the financial health desk, if there's any health desk that is available to check all our interim services, the monitoring, the evaluation, the learning that they need, the sustainability of the project, is there any coordination in terms of the services that they render, and are they also NPO compliant? Those are the funding criteria that we came up with, and this was due to the funding model that we came up with after our partnership with the EU UNODC project, where a service provider was appointed in 2010 to develop a costing and a funding model. This service provider did not, fortunately, also not focus on VEP, but we also requested the service provider also to look at other programs like people with disabilities, families, social crime prevention, substance abuse, and the elderly, so that the program should be able to help also other programs when they do their funding for NGOs. Through the amount that I have already alluded to on top there, which is 18 billion euros, we are able to grant finances to civil society organizations that provide direct services to victims of crime and violence. Also, civil society organizations that provide capacity building to CSOs offering services to victims of violence. Also, granted also finances or funding to the research and policy institutions who conducted research in the area of victim empowerment. In total, 68 grants were awarded to well-established organizations and 47 to emerging organizations. When we looked at our criteria, we also ensured that the emerging organizations that are also not funded by government are also taken into consideration when we look at the criteria for funding. This is just a breakdown to show you the amount that has been distributed to all the provinces regarding the money that we got from the EU funding. As you can see, it's from KZN, 12 organizations were funded, Gauteng 10, Limpopo 13, Eastern Cape 5, Northwest 4, Western Cape 12, Free State 7, Northern Cape 1, and Mpumalanga 4. And this is the funding that was also advertised. The proposal for the funding was advertised in our national newspapers, and this is due to the response that we got from different provinces for them to can submit their business plan to get funding. And this is the amount that was granted to all those organizations. And these are established organizations. The other breakdown is for the emerging organizations per province. And these are the organizations that never received any funding from government. So we also had to look at their needs and ensure that they also get a grant in terms of them enhancing and upgrading the standard of service delivery within their organizations. We had KZN that had 13, Gauteng 3. Limpopo was one of the ones that responded in large numbers. We have 17 emerging organizations that we are funding through the EU funding. Eastern Cape is 6, Northwest 5, Western Cape 4, Free State 4, Northern Cape 4, and Mpumalanga 4. In total, an amount of 4 million was dispersed to these organizations. In terms of the victim empowerment legislation, we had also were able to appoint a service provider to conduct a feasibility study in the development of the victim empowerment legislation in the year 2010. And the service provider has now completed its task after it has done all the consultative workshops with the provinces to gather input on the study. The feasibility report is now available on the legislation, and the roadmap report has been submitted. The department is currently with our legal unit in the process of now vetting our current policies to initiate the process of developing a victim empowerment legislation. So we are already at that process of now vetting the current policies to embark on the development of the legislation. In terms of public awareness on domestic violence, we just need to allude that we didn't have sufficient budget allocated to us, but with the donor funding from the EU Programme of Assistance to VEP and with UNODC as our implementing partner, a service provider was appointed to develop a victim empowerment brand strategy, which is called Everyday Heroes Brand, and the slogan is "Together we can stand up and help to empower victims to become survivors in our community." We developed 6 cartoon booklets on domestic violence, human trafficking, child sexual assault abuse, abuse of the elderly, people with abuse of people with disability, and sexual assault. We are in the process of printing the cartoons, which will also send to the committee once they have been printed, because we want them to be ready when we launch the One Stop Center in Limpopo. The Everyday Hero Brand will be launched in Limpopo on the 8th of September, and we will, from there, we will start with 9 provincial roadshows, which will be conducted on the brand to raise awareness on victims of crime, including domestic violence. In terms of the synergy on the minimum standard and the victims charter, an interdepartmental committee for victims charter was established in 2008 to educate communities on the rights of victims. This committee reports quarterly to the National Victim Empowerment Management Forum and ultimately to the JCPS cluster. Through the victims charter, the VP articulates the rights-based approach in providing services by all stakeholders. The minimum standards for service delivery were developed and are aligned to the victims charter. We also developed the domestic violence guidelines, which ensure that it is aligned to the victims charter. And in terms of our synergy with other departments, we have other various departments that include SAPS, which renders victim-friendly facilities and special police services at all police stations. We also have partnership with NPA for court preparation support and specialized integrated services, which is specifically also on the Sexual Offences Act. We also have direct support to victims in the form of counseling, provision of shelters, and provision of one-stop centers, which is the Department of Social Development responsibility. Also, court support and assistance by DOJ. Victim participation empowerment in terms of parole board and hearings and restorative justice, which is done by DCS. And victim assistance by the Department of Health, specifically on medical legal services. In terms of the provision of counseling services at Tuduzela Center, one of our critical identified training needs in the victim empowerment sector was counseling services. With partnership with NPA, we established also to conduct an integrated sexual offences training for Tuduzela Centers, which is currently also running throughout the province to ensure that our community understand the role that played by all the cluster departments when coming to services rendered at Tuduzela Centers. The counseling services all provinces at Tuduzela Center referred to identified organizations funded by department for such service to be provided. With the EU funding, a service provider was also appointed to train social workers, cluster departments, and civil society organizations on trauma counseling and leadership. We also capacitated officials and civil society on the integrated trauma counseling. The target number was 1.8 officials to be trained. However, the project exceeded the target number. In total, 2,000 government officials and emerging organizations. In total, 2,000 government officials and emerging civil society organizations were trained on how to manage trauma. Even though we have tried to achieve what we have already alluded to, we still have our own challenges as a victim empowerment directorate in terms of our baseline budget, which is currently not adequate. If it was not because of the funding that we received from the EU, some of the activities that I've mentioned before wouldn't have been successful. We still don't have shelters in rural areas, and this is progress. It is in progress in terms of us to ensure that there are shelters in the rural areas. The issue of shortage of social workers is also one of our challenges, although we are also looking at using also our social auxiliary workers who can be able to assist in this challenge that we have. Not enough trained counselors, hence we embarked on that massive training for counselors. Also the infrastructure that we have, most of the NGOs that are rendering services in the form of a shelter, they run their programs in a normal house, not a structure that can take more than 20 victims. We also don't have full-time VP staff in provinces and regions, and that's also have a serious challenge of reaching out to other victims of crime. The other issue, just a challenge that we have, is the sustainability of the funded projects and also our emerging organization that I've already mentioned, that this organization did not have any funding from government. That means we need to ensure that come the end of the project, which is 2010 March, we do have funds available to ensure that we sustain those emerging organizations. And this is one of our plan of action that we came up with in terms of ensuring that we sustain the project. We have submitted a sector bid to the National Treasury to request additional funding to enable the department to sustain the programs that we developed through the donor funding, more specifically for trauma counseling, training, and awareness and education. And also to add that also we have supposed to run victim empowerment forums at provincial and district level as a cluster department to ensure that there is coordination of effective services in the community. In conclusion, I'd just like to mention that the Select Committee to take note of the work in progress done by the department despite the limited funds or budget to deliver effective services to victims of crime and violence, which also includes domestic violence. I thank you.
Thank you very much. That was quick and straight to the point. I will then afford members an opportunity to make recommendations and also an assessment if there is improvement from the domestic violence, public hearing that we've held. Also, in addition to what we have learned in America, I think that will also be quite helpful in terms of recommendations. Honorable Mashamaite, Honorable Worth, Honorable Zidane, and Honorable Mukoro.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. Chair, maybe just to make a short comment. I think the presentation is very good. It shows progress from the department, and the only problem which they have raised is the insufficient budget in the department. But then maybe just to ask the department to share with us the physical location of shelters per province, so that when we do our oversight, we are able to visit those shelters. As well as maybe the stakeholders as well, so that we know the stakeholders in our provinces, so that we interact with them. The last thing, Chairperson, is you have identified your challenges here, and then you also have a plan of action. But the plan of action does not cover other challenges that we have here. I don't know as to whether we don't have a plan of these other challenges, like not having full-time VP staff in the provinces and districts, and then shortage of social workers, you know, and then you don't have a plan of this. Can you maybe share with us what is your plan for in addressing those challenges? Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you. What?
Thank you, Chi, and thank you to the department for your briefing. Of course, there's nothing wrong with the Domestic Violence Act. It's a very good act, but of course the problem has been with the implementation thereof. I'm very interested to see that best practice one-stop model has been developed in Limpopo. What I'd like to know is, does that make provision under the one-stop for shelter as well? It's one thing for an abused person to go and be offered shelter just for one evening, but often the abused person can't be returned to the same household where it's going to happen all over again. So sometimes it gets dragged out for it could be a few months. Does this one-stop shelter make provision for that? I'm very pleased to see there's been about 1,800, if I recall correctly, counsellors that have been trained. There's also one thing, I think we also saw from our visit overseas, was what about trained, I know they're difficult to come by, how many trained psychologists are there? Often you need, you know, that's now a person with a degree, a trained psychologist to help sort out some of the problems. How many, what is the shortage on that, on psychologists? Then I saw here somewhere with regard, too long-winded about this with regard to the police stations, where it says here, victim-friendly facilities and special police services, SAPs. Is the SAP, are these in existence at all SAPs? I've noticed that they do in certain main cities or main stations, but particularly in rural areas. How far have the SAPs come towards assisting with regard to having victim-friendly facilities, and that the police themselves know or have somebody on duty to assist, particularly children, minors, and women who come in to the police station. How far has that got? Can we go into any police station and they can comply, or is this still a problem? Chair, with that, thank you very much.
Thank you. Nasatani?
Thank you very much. I'm partly covered with the last two speakers, Chen. I'm from a province which is too much rural, the Eastern Cape. Chairperson, when these documents come, they said that in rural areas, first the last, they said that on their challenges, they said that there's still not enough shelters in the rural areas. Chairperson, I don't know, how can this department be, because in the deep, deep rural areas, there's nothing of those things, nothing, Chairperson. So, I don't know, since it is so fortunate, because I served this committee from 2004, during the time it was a combined committee with the NA, they also mentioned that there's nothing, they said that it's not enough in the rural areas. Up to now, it's not enough. Yes, I see the progress, but in the rural areas, Chairperson, I don't want to lie, there's nothing. If the department can go to the deep rural areas and make these sectors to be there, or maybe to send the social workers, because, yes, I understand there's a lot of shortage of social workers, but if the department can assist those that are near the rural areas, can go deep and assist those people that are staying there. It's just a comment, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Mukoro.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, let me say thank you to the department for giving us this report. It gives an impression that there is something that is being done. If at all, something is being done, but from here it does seem there is. So we appreciate that. And I also appreciate the question that is asked by Honorable
Mashamaite, that you pinpoint where you have made this establishment. The place and the names of this establishment, so that when we do oversight, we should actually satisfy ourselves to go directly to these institutions, not only to look at them, but also to see the operations and how people are being cared for. Thank you, Ramasha Malute. Yeah, a question. I would like to know what common violations men do face in their domestic life. And also, are men's shelters being established separate from shelters of women and children? These are two questions. And the other question, I see here in the list of allocations, as I said, I'm from the Northern Cape Chair, and here I'm going to speak on behalf of the Northern Cape. I see it is the province that got the least allocations. One would like to know the reason why. And the least number of allocations. I see KZN got 12, Gauteng 10, Limpopo 13, I'm sure maybe the MEC or whatever, the minister is from Limpopo or whatever. Yeah, and what would also like to know, what are the criteria used in determining these allocations? Thank you. And also, just to emphasize on the question or the comment of my other chair, I know I'm chaired by women. Now I'm just there, you know, a whip. This is my chair, and she's also my chair. And these are the two committees that I belong to. That the rural areas. Areas where these things are actually happening, where there's little observation from departments, because departments are far away from rural areas. You don't find any office of the department, of any department, operating in rural areas. But when these opportunities come, considerations is only given mostly around the urban areas. Now, Matukani says there is nothing and absolutely nothing happening in the rural areas where she comes from in the Eastern Cape, and it is predominantly a rural province, like my province. So, in that, I would like just to draw the attention of the department that please, I know you are doing difficult work. I know you are short of resources, especially finances. But I advise, and very strongly so, that when you do allocation, whoever sits in the office and say, I take so much, I send it to this province, you must make recommendation, because you are now in contact with this committee and you will be in a position to know the concern of this committee, that most of the allocation should actually be directed to rural areas. That's where development must take place. That's where real care must take place, because these people are far away from you know, from government offices. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I also want to piggyback on a question that I think it came out for the third time now. Page 5 of your presentation, the very same issue that Honorable Mukhoro has just alluded to. I want to know the functionality of the victim empowerment centers, you know, are they functional? Limpopo again, 17, does that mean that domestic violence is very high there? And what could be the contributing factor? I don't know if you do have such information. You know, I think another thing, you know, as much as we need to ask questions, but we also need to try and bring solutions or recommendations to this whole thing. Because for me, domestic violence, it needs a, it's we're supposed to have a holistic approach on it, you know. I want to know your relationship with local government. I will tell you why I'm saying local government, because I think for me they are the key role players in this whole thing, especially offices of the executive mayors. They could actually be a center point of, or maybe people who are supposed to be championing this domestic violence in both in two ways, making sure that they actually budget, you know. It should not be, I don't see it as a, as a program that should only be that social development should be carrying it alone. I think housing also should play a role. I'll tell you why housing, because you've also mentioned one of your challenges is the shelters and the centers themselves, that most of the centers that are there is actually privately owned houses. Others, they try to extend their houses with checks, you know, inadequate structures that are not conducive, you know, for living and all that. So I think I've got so much to say about domestic violence, but what I'm saying is that we need to plan again, you know, because what we're trying to do now is just to plaster over the cracks. We need to deal with the cause. We need to educate our people. We need to know why people are still doing this thing. You know, is it social conditions? Is it poverty? We need to get those things, you know. I think that's when we'll be able to solve this. But I think one also needs to appreciate the fact that the department has done well, especially in terms of the improvement of counseling services provided at the Thuthuzela centers. I can see that there's something here. And also to mention that the committee had an opportunity to do an oversight on one of your Thuthuzela centers here in Cape Town. What is this place? I forgot where we went to.
Cape Town.
Yeah, in Cape Town. Yeah. Where was that? I don't remember, but you were able to go there. You know, the center is functional, but the space... they don't have enough space to accommodate victims. And another thing, it's sort of like I don't know if I'll be correct if I say it's sort of like a waiting room, because for me it doesn't necessarily provide the help that the victim will need, you know, because sometimes one will come during the night, at 12 midnight. You don't have a choice, but after you've reported, after you've gone through that counseling, you still have to go back to that person who has caused trouble. So you understand such things, you know. We need housing plays a key role. We need to get their buying in. We are recommending that as you go back and plan, rope in housing. The second department that must play a key role is the South African Police Services. We need a specialized unit that people will be trained, you know, especially focus on this. Because currently we have law enforcers who will go there, and what they do, they act as mediators, you know. And those are the things that were raised by women during the review on the Domestic Violence Act. So I'm just trying to reiterate to say, let's go back to our basics. Let's try and replan this whole thing. We need subs. We need special unit that will deal with, that will actually deal with issues that are related to domestic violence.
Also drug rehabilitation.
And then?
Drug rehabilitation.
And the drug rehabilitation. Yeah, hence I said earlier on, we don't know what is the cause. We need to know. And cases are different. We need to know again why Limpopo is having so many
victim empowerment. Maybe we should go there as a committee to go and do oversight and check what is happening. It could be that people wanted to just spend the money. I'm not saying it's like that. I'm just thinking aloud. It could be just people wanted to spend the money and they decided to make... Because really, I think in Gauteng and this province, we need more. You know, if we had more in Gauteng and this province, because of the social challenges that are there, it would make sense for me, you know, as a politician. But Limpopo, I know people there, they are very loving and caring, you know. So... So we still need to investigate why the people so many. I've mentioned the relationship with local government. You know, we went to New York, but the Mukhoro, I thought you would share that with the...
Oh, no, maybe that would be the next...
The next
action,
round.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Remember you guys said you wanted to be released at 12:30. So we need to try and
very
and,
much.
Yeah. Mm. We also want to know if you have made any, is there any legislation, you know, that will guide the victim empowerment centers, because we cannot just have centers programs that have no legislations to guide them. And then how far you, if there is any, and if not, we need you to please, as a matter of agency, start looking into that. The monitoring and evaluation, I think you mentioned something like GIS. I missed that. I don't know what that is. I want you to go back to the GIS and explain to us, because I am worried about the money that you are actually investing into this victim empowerment centers and... the NGOs also that you are funding, you know, as to whether you have a monetary mechanism for one, duplication. You may find that people are living in the same neighborhood, you know, within a very short distance, but they're doing the same thing. And as government, you're talking about cooperatives, as to how far are you in terms of ensuring that people group themselves, and they, by so doing, they will be lessening competition and all that, you know. And they also don't apply for funding in different government departments, maybe using one name and all that. So I'm more interested on your monitoring and funding. I will pause for now so that we allow you an opportunity to respond. And if members still feel that there's something that they want to raise, we still have an hour to do so. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Use your mic, ma'am. Okay, thanks. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I will start first with the challenges, because the first Honorable Speaker said I did not mention the plan of action for all other challenges that we have. Maybe I just have to go through then just to indicate what plan of action we have put in place. In terms of budget, I have mentioned that we have submitted a bid to the National Treasury so that we can have an adequate budget. And in terms of the shelters that are not enough in the rural areas, yes, this is one of our biggest challenges. As National Department, we only facilitate the establishment of shelters, and the provinces have to actually establish those shelters. We are engaging with them on an quarterly basis, because we meet every quarter with the provinces to ensure that they give us progress reports in terms of how far they have gone in terms of developing and establishing shelters in the provinces. I think only two provinces gave us feedback, but that was Gauteng that said they have established already two for men, because that was one of the shortages. And Limpopo have also indicated that in their plan they have also plan to have at least additional two shelters in 2011-2012. They even showed us a plan. And the other provinces have not yet come back to us. But just to also indicate the progress that we have done, at National Department, we have a unit called Infrastructure Unit. That unit has consulted with all the other programs so that we can give them our need for all facilities that we want to establish in the provinces, so that they can come up with a standardized structure, infrastructure,
for our facilities, be it the shelter, the children's room, a treatment center for drugs and substance abuse for the elderly. That structure is in place. It has been approved by senior management. They also submitted a bid to Treasury to enable them to look at all other provinces that are really in short of facilities to see if they cannot assist also the provinces. So that is one aspect that we also can say we are addressing the issue of facilities or shelters also through that unit, because they also work very closely with the Department of Public Works to ensure that even if there are existing structures, what is it that they can assist them in terms of allocating building for our facilities or for our programs. In terms of shortage of social workers, there is a recruitment strategy in place to recruit social workers. We have scholarships on a yearly basis that we give to students at first year and at matric level who wants to study social work. So there is a strategy in place to ensure that we recruit more social workers. But we are not only looking at the social workers, we are also training social auxiliary workers to ensure that they also augment the shortage of social workers in the field. And we are currently now also looking at our retired social workers who can also assist, especially when it comes to our backlog that we have in foster care. We really try to use all the skills that is there in the community that we can really utilize. The issue of trained counselors, I've already mentioned that we have trained counselors, but this is not the end of the training. The bid also look at capacity building, which means that we have to continuously train. The 1,800, the 2,000 that we said we have trained, for us is not enough. We still have to go back and train counselors to ensure that they provide counseling services to our victims. I've mentioned the issue of infrastructure. Although we said it's normal houses, but the infrastructure is looking at what kind of an infrastructure before we even register a facility. What infrastructure needs to be in place for them to can accommodate all the needs of the victims. I think Honorable Chair has mentioned the space at Tutuzela centers. And that Tutuzela center, I can just mention that Tutuzela is more of a crisis center because they only help you overnight and the next day they have to refer. But if you don't have enough facilities, it's also going to be very difficult for us to refer to a facility where the person can be put in a safe environment rather than go back to the abusive environment. So those are the issues that we are looking at. And the issue of full-time VED staff members, our HR is embarking on a restructuring of our structure, both at national and at provincial level, to ensure that the structure that we have at national are aligned to provincial structures, so that we can be able to have dedicated staff in the victim empowerment program who will also focus also on VEP issues, because currently social workers that we have in the provinces are rendering a generic services. I think that they're not only looking at VEP, they're looking at other programs such as children, substance abuse and social crime prevention. So sometimes we find that they focus more on priority areas like children and tend to neglect other programs. So we want that kind of structure that will enable us to have dedicated staff. And the sustainability, I've mentioned that we have submitted also a bid to address the sustainability of emerging organizations. And the issue of one-stop center model, I just want to indicate that our one-stop center model is not a one-day model. It's a model that is looking at accommodating victims from day one to a maximum of 6 months. And this is not just a couple of months, it depends also on the healing process of that particular victim, and also if the person is ready for exit. Because we cannot just release or exit a victim without knowing where that particular person is going to stay. Is she going to be back to the family, or are we looking at finding an alternative accommodation for her in the form of either a flat or a house, depending also on her economic condition. If she's employed, we can see how we link up with the other department to see where she can be able to get a job so that she can also be self-reliant and independent economically. So one of our...
Can I interrupt you?
Yes.
As you're talking about that, I'm worried about the issue of social grants. Where does it play the role there? How do you link this whole thing with social grants as well?
Okay, in terms of the social grants also, a person who's receiving a social grant, at times, I remember I discussed with one of the provinces, they said there's also like a double dipping. Mm. The person is receiving services from government, mm. which is free, mm. and at the same time she's receiving a grant, mm. which for us, they said, is it a double dipping from the government. But the other recommendation was made that instead of that person also receiving a grant, why not open an account mm-hmm. for her so that by the end she exits the shelter, she is able to go out and live a normal life with her children and be able to maintain the child rather than just to stop it. But this is a discussion that is still in process because we need to look at the legality of that kind of recommendation, if mm-hmm. it's legally compliant in terms of the grant policy. So that was one of the issues that was raised by one of our officials from a shelter that is in Gauteng, that we have a woman here who thinks that now the grant is now like a salary for her.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't need to spend it on the child, but she has to spend it on her own needs.
Mm-hmm.
So that is another issue that is really on discussion for us with the other units of social security, whether we're asking them to suspend it or to ask her to put that money in a bank account so that come 6 months at least she has some capital for her to start a living outside the shelter. So those are the issues that we really have to iron out with our units of social security and make sure that we are not encouraging people to receive a grant whilst they are also receiving a grant in disguise in terms of being accommodated in the shelter. I was just explaining about the one-stop center model. The one-stop center model is a holistic approach that we have come up in terms of ensuring that if the victim is admitted in a shelter, in a one-stop center, the person should be able to receive services from medical services, counseling services, police officer must be there to take a statement, and if need be, court support officer must also be there. It's a holistic approach under one roof where services are rendered to a victim. The person, minimum of stay is one day or 2 days, and maximum is 6 months. But we have also made a provision that we cannot just say a person has lived at 6 months, even if the person has no alternative accommodation. So we look also at the exit plan. What is the possible alternative place for the person to go and stay, even though the case has been finalized and things are now, she has gone through the process of healing through the therapeutic intervention. So we are also looking at those possibilities of not just saying the person must leave the shelter without any alternative accommodation. And in the issue of trained psychologists, yes, we do have, but I don't have the number of psychologists that are in, or the statistics of psychologists that we can find out from our mental health experts or our Department of Health about the shortage of psychologists. And the issue of SAPS also, we are also engaging SAPS in terms of the establishment of the victim-friendly facilities. But at the moment, I know the last discussion that we had, they said they had 809 victim-friendly facilities, but how it has been distributed throughout the country, it's something that we're not aware, but they did indicate that not all police stations have victim-friendly facilities. They're still in the process of establishing them through the 3-year period of our MTF. And the issue of to have somebody on duty, how far is that? This is a discussion that is also all in terms of how do we manage and supervise people who are rendering services to victims. Because we are quite worried about the kind of services that are rendered there. Because volunteers are just containing, they're not rendering counseling services. So we need to ensure that there is a social worker also that is being allocated from our department to ensure that proper interventions or therapeutic interventions are rendered to the victims whilst being attended to in the victim-friendly facilities.
I have already alluded to the issue of rural areas. Yes, I agree, there's nothing in the shelters. I have visited most of the provinces. There is nothing in the rural areas, and this is the issue that we are addressing also to ensure that we facilitate establishment of those facilities. I think recently in May, we also made a request to Transnet about the containers to see if we cannot also request them to provide us with containers. We're just waiting for the proposal, if it's going to be approved, for us to can see how many containers they can allocate us. And the provinces have been contacted to indicate and identify areas in the rural areas where we can use that as a temporary measure for them to can render services in the rural areas. Because I am quite concerned also in the rural areas. I know rural tenor, Eastern Cape, that one I have also visited. There are deep rural areas where nothing is provided there. The operations of our shelters, yes, our shelters are operational, and we will be able to give you the list as we have been requested, and allocate the physical address and the contact people, and even our BP coordinators, if need be, so that you can be able to contact or visit those facilities. And then I was also asked about the common violation that are experienced by men. Yes, men are also being violated, not necessarily some of them physically, but emotionally and financially. Because at times some of our partners or our husbands are unemployed and they rely entirely on their partners for survival. So if you are not also, because there is also financial abuse and emotional abuse, so they are mostly financially and emotionally abused if they have no means of income. And those are the issues that are raised by men, that their partners or their wives are emotionally abusing them. Hence, this is the kind of abuse that is being reported from our men. Currently, we don't have any shelters that are accommodating men where women and children are accommodated. The two shelters that have been established in housing specifically for men, not a mixture of men and women. So we are looking at separate shelters for men, although in the infrastructure model that we were able to give inputs into the development of the model, we said if the model can have a separate kind of a structure, men this side and women this side, there's no interaction, but at least they should be under one environment, although it's at demarcated areas. So that's one of the recommendation that we made, that you don't want to separate them, but we can accommodate them under one roof or under one structure. And then the Honorable Mokoro asked about why Northern Cape has the list. I think when I presented on the list of the NGOs that have been allocated grants from our EU funding, it depends entirely on the funding. I remember I showed you the funding criteria. So every NGO that has submitted a business plan was supposed to meet the requirements of the funding criteria. And then one of the most criteria that disqualified some of the NGOs was non-compliant with the NPO Act. The NPO Act has certain requirements from the NGOs that if you are registered, you are expected to submit an annual report and an annual financial report. And some of them that applied could not even were deregistered when we checked with our NPO unit. So those are some of the issues that we discovered when we get to allocate funds. We didn't allocate because we favored them, but we allocated the funding based on the information and the requirements that they met in terms of the criteria that was used. We even came up at making it more user-friendly than the criteria, because we also had to come up with two levels of funding. The one was for the established and the one was the emerging, because the established could meet all the requirements. But with the emerging, we had to relax some of the requirements, like the audited statement. We couldn't say we want an audited statement because they couldn't afford an auditor. But we said if they can have a financial statement from the bank to say they have, this is how they have been managing their funds, that was a requirement that was more relaxed for them to can qualify for funding. So the funding criteria was relaxed for some of the emerging. And in addition to that, before they could also get funding, we had training for them on the governance of the organization, the financial management, and how to complete the business plan. I think one of the weaknesses that we picked up was that they couldn't even complete a business plan, and we had to make sure that they are assisted on how to complete the business plan. And this is a continuous process currently, because we also develop a mentoring and coaching model where we ensure that all those 47 are not left to work on their own, but they are going to be mentored and coached by established organizations to ensure that they also meet the requirements in terms of accountability, quarterly reports, and their audited financial statements that they need to submit at the end of the contract, which is a one-year contract for the funding. Okay, I was asked why only in urban areas. Please address the issues of. Okay, I have addressed the issue of rural areas, that we are addressing the issue of rural areas. And the functionality of services, yes, Madam Honorable Chair, our services are functional in those areas. And the 70 that we have allocated to Limpopo, it depended also on the active participation of our coordinators in each province. I think our coordinator was very, very much active in terms of ensuring that they meet all the requirements. She helped them to submit timely and also to meet the requirements as requested by the advert that was put in our national papers. And I need also to allude that this was an EU process, not a departmental process. They have also very strict rules in terms of funding of NGOs. So we needed to ensure that they also meet those requirements as stipulated by the policies of the funder. The relationship with local government, yes, but not all provinces have a relationship with local government, and I think they play a very critical role when it comes to the executive mayor being a champion on issues of domestic violence, because when you look at women leaving their houses, not having an alternative place to stay, this is one of our critical challenges, because some women don't want to be in shelters, but they want to have an alternative place and not going back home, where she's going also to crowd her family. So those are the issues that we are looking at, that if they have any low-cost housing, that they can be able also to address those issues with us and ensure that if a woman has been a victim of domestic violence and had to leave her house because of the abuse, what can they assist us in terms of allocating a low-cost housing. But also, that also depends entirely on the economical viability of the victim. If the victim is unemployed and she has to contribute a certain amount per month for rental, that's another issue that we are looking at in terms of how they can assist them to have an accommodation that doesn't require any rental to be paid on a monthly basis. But we will follow that up. We are currently also, as a national department or National Victim Empowerment Management Forum, we are visiting all the provinces to ensure that we coordinate our services from national to the provinces, and also encourage them also to involve local government in their forums so that they can be able to discuss those issues as they crop up in terms of the challenges that they have when they render services to victims. Okay, the issue of the space of Thuthuzela, I've already mentioned that yes, we are aware that the Thuthuzela have no space, but if we can ensure that our referral mechanism is like concretized so that people don't have to struggle if they have to be placed in a facility rather than to be referred back home, because there's no point of us intervening and at the same time sending the person back to the very environmental abusive environment. Okay, and then the housing issue, yes, this is one department that we felt it should be part of our management meetings, which we have started, I think last year we engaged them also when they wanted us to identify possible victims of abuse who could also benefit from the 16 houses during 16 days. But we said to them, let it not be only during 16 days, we want them to be on board so that they can
attend our quarterly meetings, but we miss them on one of our quarterly meetings. We'll also make a follow-up and find out why they didn't attend, because we are not only going to discuss when there's a crisis, but it should be a plan in place to see how they can best assist us when we need a alternative accommodation or a house for our victims. Honourable Chair has mentioned that there is no legislation that guides VEP. Yes, there is no legislation, and this is one of the gaps that we identified when we were reviewing also our shelter strategy. Our shelter strategy, as much as we have shelters in place, our shelters are not registered. Hence, we identified that as a gap that we need to have a legislation that will govern the registration of shelters. We have started the process. In terms of my presentation, I indicated that we did a feasibility study last year, and the report is now at our office, has been submitted, and the recommendation was that there is a need for a legislation. And the process thereafter now is for our legal unit to assist us in terms of vetting the current policies that we have, which will enable us to draft a legislation. So it is a process that is in place, is work in progress. We have already started that process last year. And you mentioned that I should also explain the GIS. GIS stands for Generic Indicator Set. Those are indicators that we developed to can identify the services that we render in the community as a cluster. Not necessarily as Department of Social Development, but indicators for health, for SAPS, for justice and FPA, and for correctional services, to see what is it that we are really rendering in the community, and what kind of the trends are there in terms of the services rendered by all the departments. And we do have an MNE tool in place, which we are currently using. Mm-hmm. We have piloted this GIS in, I think, four provinces before. The first one was three. Now it's six in all. So the third, the ninth provinces will be coming. So that by the time now we go full-blown in terms of nine provinces implementing this tool, we have piloted it, and people understand what is expected of them. And it is quite successful, because all the cluster departments are responding positively in terms of collecting data on the services that we are rendering, and there's a tool also to enable us to analyze the data that we are collecting currently. And the issue of duplication of services, before we fund any organizations, the person who's responsible for transfers or funding of organization has to do an on-site visit to ensure that in that community is there no any other services rendering the very same services. Because this is for us to avoid duplication of services. Because if we have the same service provider rendering the service that you are applying funding for, we can rather ask you to join hands with that organization and see how best you can be able to address the needs of organizations in the community. So the duplication of services is one of our criteria to ensure that we don't encourage people to render the same services within the same area. We can rather even assist if there's any other services that is lacking in that area, recommend the organization to rather look at that service that is lacking in that community and rather apply funding for that particular service. I don't know whether I've answered everything.
Yeah, can I just remind...
Use the mic
over there.
The microphone.
Sorry. Just remind me about one of my question, is that what are the common violations that men faces in their domestic life? the most prevalent one.
Through you, Honorable Chair, I think I responded. I said the common abuse experienced by men is emotional and financial abuse.
Oh. Thank you, ma'am. I failed to capture that point. Thank you.
Kandubani, are they expected to be
you are creating an impression that you are being abused. I don't know whether I
affect us financially or emotionally. But I understand that I think you're being abused, you think what is about this thing. But you know what, you are also protected by the law. It doesn't matter whether you are a member of parliament or not. You should go to the authorities and report if there's anything. Okay, thank you very much for the responses. Honorable Mashamaite, yeah, we still have 30 minutes.
Thanks, Chi. I just wanted to refer, this is a matter of interest, to our visit. We went to the United States and we went to the Bronx, which is a poorer area of New York City. It's quite fascinating how they've got this whole one-stop thing. Because often the abused person has got to have trauma counseling, but they even got little playrooms for the children and all that they bring. But often then the abused person wants to divorce. So they even got a court for that. And normally, for some strange reason in America, you can't see the judge. He sits behind a big podium, behind the emblem in the front, but then they have special courts. Because they find there the trend is that domestic violence is mainly amongst young people, or younger. They say when you get old, you pass causing domestic violence. So they say, but they are very strict on, they look after the abused person, but the abuser, they are very strict because they say if he or she abuses someone, he's going to do it again. He's just going to do it to his next girlfriend or next one. So they bring him in, and they give him a sentence appropriate with what he has actually done. And then if he's got a job, he's got to sort of like pay maintenance immediately. They don't take him to put him in the court unless he pays maintenance or pays for what he has done, he or she has done, in some other form. It's quite interesting. So they also concentrate a lot on the abuser needs more help than the abused. The abused can overcome it eventually, but he or she has got psychological problems, maybe drink problems, drug-related problems, just problems in general, needs a psychologist. So it's very interesting how they tackle both things. That's just for you to say.
Can I just add
some?
You want to add?
Yeah, to add.
Okay. But I wish, with your respect, RFFLA, Mr. Honorable Mokoro, for I am on the same. Is it the same issue?
Yeah, I just wanted to add on what the Honorable was.
Okay, it's fine. I'm giving you
a oh. Yeah, Chair, I just wanted to add that what really impressed me in New York was the office of the executive mayor has established an office of the commissioner. A commissioner who's got an infrastructure around herself. And it's all women, like, as I can see here, there's more women than men here. And that side too, it seems we're really running fast into becoming a world that is governed by women, but the same situation that side. And the commissioner is a woman. This lady has got an infrastructure around herself which work in the community on the ground. And these are the things that, as my chair there mentioned, that we would like in future, if it can be possible, to see being established in the country. Because problems are on the ground. Problems are, you know, dealt with effectively by local government. Mm. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Hamish?
Yeah, thanks, Honorable Chair. Sorry. Mind it, we just need a punch card answer. whether this on your funding criteria, the imaging, you know, CSOS, have they been funded?
Previously, no, but they have been relying on other small donors for survival. That's why the focus is now on them to ensure that come the end of our project, we that we fund, we sustain them, and ensure there's funding available to sustain them in terms of funding them further than the EU funding.
Thank you.
Chair.
You also talk of sustainability of the funded projects and emerging organizations. Have you ever experienced any, you know, projects which were not sustainable? And presently, what mechanism of interest to ensure that they become sustainable?
Now, for VEP, this is the first also.
Before you respond,
yes.
Mark, to the.
Thank you, Chair. I've heard that the talk about the provinces, that they didn't respond. You talk about two provinces, if I'm not mistaken, that responded to your call about their plans. You said about only two, and then others didn't respond. So I want to know the mechanism. Or the time frame, did you give them the time frame? Because if they don't respond, now when did they going to respond? Because the people are suffering on the ground whilst they are not responding to your call.
Can I just answer the first question that through you, Honorable Chair? I think with the first question, this is the first time that Victim Empowerment Program is funded by the EU funder. And one of the agreements reached by the department and the funder was that at the end of the project, you should have a sustainability plan in place. And the sustainability plan is that we take over the program that they have been funding so that we continue running those projects. As I said, one of my plan of action was to ensure that we also submit a bid, which we did, to National Treasure, to ensure that all the projects that we have mentioned in terms of capacity building, in terms of emerging organization that needs to be sustained, there is funds available in 2012-2013 financial year. So the bid has been submitted. We will be getting the results sometime in October. But the sustainability plan was one of our agreements with the EU funding, that when we come to the end of the project in March, you want to see your sustainability plan. This is the plan that we have in place in terms of having ensured that there is money available to continue the project. Okay, I think we did ask our provinces for them to submit their 2011-2012 plans to ensure that there is a plan that we can see that they are in the process of establishing shelters. We are also now making a follow-up because we did that request in April during our meeting, which is our first quarterly meeting in the financial year. So we will definitely, we are on the process of also following it up in terms of when are they going to give us that plan, how many shelters have they now planned to establish within their provinces. But this was for this financial year. But October month is another quarterly month that we meet as these provinces. We expect them also to indicate, because they have to submit quarterly reports to our national forum, which indicates all the issues and all the requests that we have made in terms of their developed or deliverables. But we are not only waiting for the meeting, we also make constant follow-up to check how many shelters they have planned to establish within this financial year. So it is within this financial year to ensure that they have met the requirements in terms of their deliverables.
Okay, members, is there anything that you want to raise? Nothing? Okay, Ramesh?
Last in chair, we have requested the department to provide us with the fiscal location of those shelters.
And the names.
The, you know, and we request that it must maybe reach us before we go for probation weeks. So during our probation weeks, maybe we can.
Okay.
You know,
okay. I think they've noted that. It means in all provinces.
Yes.
Okay. You can do that via Madia.
Okay.
Provincial week is on the
from the 12th to the 16th.
12th to the 16th, so you still have a week to actually coordinate that, yeah. Lastly, from my side, is that I think SAFS is also doing a lot of work. The Community Law Center now, they've just shown me something, you know, and your report is not talking to that. When you plan, we want SAFS to be part of your planning. That's the first. And the second issue is that from what SAFS is doing and with what you've just presented now, and you've just, you know, highlighted your relationship with... No, you didn't highlight. I think you did in detail. Give us your relationship with the justice, which is also one of the main role players in this whole thing. But about SAFS, it was very silent, and I don't think we will feel confident, you know, to go out to public, to members of public and say these are the findings with regard to the Domestic Violence Act public hearings that we had. So we want you to go back and maybe invite SAFS and what is this other?
Justice.
Justice.
And then come up with a consolidated report that will then enable us to go back to the masses, you know, and maybe, I don't know, through media, whatever way, I don't know what is the procedure, how do they do it in Parliament, but we need to give people a feedback from from the hearings that we had. So we'll give you time. I don't know what time do you want, what, I don't know how much time do you need for you to be able to give us a report that all of us in here, we can feel confident that we can, because you know, if we're just going to give them this, they will still bring answers. Look, we won't be able to resolve all the problems now, but if you look at the programs that SAPS is actually trying to bring, or that SAPS is working on, it will actually complement the work that you're also doing in the report. So we're requesting that you go back, then with them. The second issue with what Mr. Mokoro has mentioned, best practice models that we've learned in New York, the executive mayor's office having a dedicated commissioner actually working on domestic violence. I think in our case, you know, we want to do this as a pilot project. It is doable. We can do it. Our interest was to start it in rural areas, but because there's no infrastructure, we still have to do so many things. I was just thinking, I'm not being biased, but because Johannesburg has got bilaterals with New York, ne? They've got some, what do they call this?
Bilateral relationship.
Yeah, bilateral relationship with New York.
Twinning.
Yeah, they have a twinning agreement with New York. And we've heard through the media that the mayor recently is from New York to try and revive their old relationship and all that. We should look at the possibility of doing this as a pilot, maybe starting with Johannesburg, because they can... Because of the relationships that are there between themselves and New York, it will be able for them to, communication flow will be easy. So I will try at my level, maybe with the committee, go to Johannesburg and meet the executive mayor and say, we want him to champion this. But he will not be able to champion it alone without inviting the department and other relevant role players. And when we table that report, our oversight report in the House, it is not going to be a statement, but we're going to debate it. We intend to invite the Deputy President. We intend to invite the Minister of Education, of Social Services, of Justice, and who else?
The
ministers first. And housing as well, yeah. And local government, we tend to invite mayors, but by that time when we debate members, I think we should be saying, in addition to our international study tour, we're able to engage with the city of Johannesburg because of their twinning agreements that they have with New York, you know, to actually look into this program and see how best it can be implemented. Look, I think Johannesburg has got the necessary infrastructure. The metropolis is there. Within the unit, it will be easy for them to. So those are the things that we are just throwing on the table for the department, you know, to go back and just review on them if they are doable. And maybe in a month's time, please come back so that we can then start holding public hearings again. And we should be able to give feedback to the communities. Members, Honorable Tukani, Honorable Mokoro.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know, Chair, because we are talking about the mayors of the district municipalities. When I shared this in my municipality with the local mayor, he was so interested. As a result, he just said that he basically wants the document, and I gave him the document that we've got from New York.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that last weekend, he told me that no, he wants to meet the court because he wants to start it, because at that municipality has got that small claim court.
Mm-hmm.
He has started that it, but I went back. Mm-hmm. He says that if I can talk to the chairperson and the mayor to be invited to the committee to share, because he wants to start it now, not later than now, because he wants he says he wants to start because there's a lot of domestic violence in the area.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of domestic violence in Butterworth in the area. As a result, if you remember, Chair, I said that if the committee can visit that area by that time, during the time there was a yes, in that area. So she wants to start that with immediate effect. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, Chair, I just want to emphasize to the department here that this what we've got from New York and the states that we visited, we actually want to make it a resolution of the House, of the NCOP, that when it comes out finally, it has a, you know, an authority of the House. And in support of what you have just said, Chair, I would like really to see, because this is really, you know, our best baby that we come with from New York. I would like to see this pilot project, because it's going to start with a pilot project, to be in a province where we really can expect efficiency in delivery. Because out of that pilot project, we are now planning to roll it out to other provinces, so that by the time the pilot projects bear fruits, we shall have built, or department shall have built, some experience, so that when it goes to other provinces, it goes there with a background of a proper experience. Thank you, Chair.
Pramish? All right. Dara? Okay. I think those were just comments, and
yeah.
But then we're giving you a month.
Yes.
Go back, and then come with a consolidated report, so that we can be able to go back to the communities and report. I think we've come to the end of our meeting, and then we thank you very much for your time and your presentation. And also please pass our warm regards to the minister and tell her that we miss her. We want to ask her questions. She's our friend, but we do want to do oversight on her. And maybe when you come back in a month's time, her presence will be highly appreciated. She's invited. She must come to this. She must come to the select committee.
We want to ask a question.
Yeah, we want to ask a question. Okay.
But not intimidating questions.
No. We don't have to. We're not telling whether it's intimidating or not. But we want to. The minister must come. Okay. Thank you very much. Have a safe journey back to Johannesburg. And thank you very much, Jane, everyone of you who attended. PMG, thank you very much. And visitors, they did not tell whether they are from America or from
France. France.
Oh, from France. France.
Yes.
Okay.
France.
All right. Yes. That's nice. Oh, what brings you here?
French visitor.
Okay. All right. The meeting is over. Thank you.
Thank you.